Lift your head, weary sinner. The river's just ahead. Down the path of forgiveness, salvation's waiting there. You build a mighty fortress, 10,000 burdens high. Love is here to lift you up.
And it's another week. This is Andrew Wood, Executive Director, Hope Resource Center. Thank you so much for tuning in. We are, of course, you can learn more about what we do at Hope at investinghope.com. You can listen to this show and the archive and the podcast at investinghope.com, also on iTunes, the TuneIn app, Google Play, wherever podcasts are found. And we certainly are grateful for the listeners out there. And it's always surprising to me, and I don't guess it should be surprising. Maybe it should be. When I'm out and people come up and say, hey, I listen to the show every week, you know, it's just we're grateful. I enjoy talking every week, and I enjoy, if I can be humble for a second, I enjoy the sound of my voice, but I know that not everybody does. And so certainly grateful for those that listen and support us in the work that we do. And so what I want to do today is talk about some things that are going on around the country, some things that are going on in Washington, D.C. with some news that's coming out today. Also, a very important movie that is currently in theaters and that I went and saw today. And I'm going to talk about that. And just a couple weeks ago, we interviewed Kerry Solomon, the writer and director of Unplanned, which is the story of Abby Johnson, former director of Planned Parenthood. And the movie is out, and it was released Thursday or Friday. And it ended up being number four in the box office. Number four with all the movies that are out, Captain Marvel and all these other big budget films. And Unplanned comes in and is number four. And Unplanned wasn't even in near the amount of theaters that some of these other films are in. And this week, they're going to be in 700 more theaters because of the showing that they had this past weekend. So excited about what's going on there. But today I did take the entire staff of Hope Resource Center. We took some time off during lunch and went and saw the movie. And I'll just say it is... you know, I've been saying it for a while because I've read the reviews. I've read the book, Unplanned, The Story of Abby Johnson. I've had conversations on this show with Abby Johnson and others. And so I knew it was going to have an impact. But man, after watching it, it is a movie that needs to be seen. And even if you are, let's say you're a pro-lifer and you're just, there's no changing that. You're just very adamant about that. You need to see this movie, and even if the movie's preaching to the choir, I think what it'll do is it'll energize, it'll empower, encourage folks that are already pro-life to do more, to stand more, to pray more, to give more. And if you are listening to this show and you are somewhere in between, so maybe you're the type of person that says, "Look, I'm pro-life personally, but I don't think the law should tell a woman what she should or shouldn't do with her body." I would disagree with you strongly on that assessment and that stance, but let's say that's your stance. I would encourage you to go see this movie. What this movie does is it gives a picture of what goes on behind the doors of an abortion clinic, and it's a firsthand account. It is not a third person's account. It is Abby Johnson, who worked in Planned Parenthood, who was the employee of the year for Planned Parenthood a few years back. And was the director of a clinic, one of the larger clinics, one of the most quote-unquote successful clinics in the Planned Parenthood organization there in Texas. And she gives her first-person account of what went on inside those walls. And I would encourage you to read her book, Unplanned. She also has another book that's called If These Walls Could Talk. And it's an amazing book as well. And so the movie... It is not, yeah, I know some people, and you know, think about quote-unquote Christian movies, and you think, well, is it going to be corny? Is it going to be cheesy? Is it going to be overly Christian? Is it going to be overly preaching a sermon? This movie does not do that, the acting is solid. The storyline is solid. It paints the picture of kind of the back and forth between Abby and her husband, between Abby and her parents who were pro-life. And watching that process is something that we need to see. There's a lot of folks out there, whether we like it or not, that say, yeah, Planned Parenthood does abortions, but man, they do a ton of good stuff. And all the good stuff that they do should allow us to overlook all the abortions. Well, go watch this movie. And again, I don't agree with that assessment that all the good stuff they do should make us overlook the abortions. Last year alone, that organization provided 328,000 abortions. So I'm sorry, but there's nothing that they would do that would allow me to overlook 328,000 heartbeats extinguished. And so when we think about the impact that a movie like this can have, when we think about the impact that laws can have, when we saw what happened in New York and Virginia and Illinois and other places that are fighting to take away rights of the unborn, that are fighting to allow for abortion through the entire pregnancy. We have presidential candidates. I've yet to hear one presidential candidate on the Democratic ticket that's running in the primary. Not one of them. There's 15 or 16 at this point, and not one of them gives any room for any type of restrictions on abortion any point through the pregnancy. So what that means is every single one that is running for the president, running for president on the Democratic side, every single one of them is for late-term abortions. Every single one of them is okay with aborting a baby because you found out it had Down syndrome. Every single one of them is for ending a pregnancy for any reason at any point in the pregnancy. Every one of them. So when people say, well, this person's moderate or this person is closer to the middle or this person, no, every single one of them is for abortion all 9 months of the pregnancy. And so what we're finding is, in God's timing, this movie, after all this conversation has been going on about abortion, this movie, Unplanned, was already set to hit theaters in March of 2019. Now, the writers and the directors and Abby and nobody involved knew that a governor of Virginia was going to make a terrible comment about abortion. No one knew that New York was going to pass a law that allowed for abortion up until point of delivery. No one knew that Illinois was going to actually want to write into their law that the fetus, that the baby in the womb has no rights. But yet, here we are. In God's timing, all of that's going on. People are starting to pay attention. People are starting to listen. People are starting to care. And then this movie hits the theaters, and people are getting to see what happens inside an abortion clinic. Now, a lot's been said about the rating of the movie, and I guess from a technical standpoint, it shouldn't have been rated R. But I would say it is somewhat graphic. And I would just maybe not take a young child, but if they're 12, 13, they probably can see it. And I think that's important. But you know your child. You know where they're at in maturity and what they can see. I would also caution you, if you're post-abortive, prepare yourself for what you may see on the screen. And see, the reason why people got upset about the R rating was because we've been told for years that abortion isn't violent, that abortion isn't graphic. It's just like any other surgery. It's just like getting your ACL repaired or having gallbladder surgery. It's not graphic. But the reality is, this movie shows us what happens, and any sensible person will say, yeah, okay, that's more than a gallbladder surgery. That's more than correcting an ACL issue. And so they actually made the case for us, saying that, no, this is violent. This is not just violent to the unborn child, but violent to the mom and the recovery process and the pushing and the selling of abortions, because that's how they make their money. And we've said this multiple times on this show and in other places, but that's where they're making their money. And so why do I get upset that they're receiving half a billion dollars from our government? It's because that $500 million allows them to shift funds in other places and still provide abortions. If abortion was about being safe, legal, and rare, you wouldn't promote the fact that you provide abortions. But go follow them on social media. Go follow these abortion clinics on social media. Go read their advertisements. Go look at their billboards. And what are we seeing? Abortion is always top of their concern. Now, they say it's reproductive rights. But it's not. It's they make a lot of money off of abortion. And so although they are a nonprofit, they're making a lot of profit. And so I would highly encourage you to go see this movie. Take a friend to go see this movie. I got a call today from someone over in Middle Tennessee who went and saw the movie and just reached out to say, hey, how can we help the pregnancy center in our local area? How can we went and watched the movie, and now we feel like we need to be engaged in what's going on. And there's a number of ways to get engaged. There's the more hands-on, like volunteering, mentoring, and actually having patient contact. But there's other ways. If you're a stay-at-home mom, if you have a job that kind of keeps you away during the day, or you have other things going on in your life, there's other ways to get involved, to be able to love on the patients that we're seeing at Hope and other pregnancy centers are seeing around this country. And when we come back, I'm going to kind of walk through some ways that you can get involved, and then we'll also shift gears and look at what's going on in Washington, D.C. with Representative Steve Scalise, who is doing some good work in Washington to call some of the representatives to the carpet to say, hey, look, we need to stand for life. We'll talk about that when we come back. So as we talk about the movie Unplanned, and again, I would strongly encourage you to go see it. It's playing out at Turkey Creek if you're in the Knoxville area and some other places as well. And you can go online and look at Unplanned Tickets, and they're actually listing where the film can be found across the country. And so would really encourage you to do that. Go see it with a small group. Go see it with your friends, especially if you have some friends that are on the fence that maybe aren't real sure about pro-life, pro-choice, or they don't like those labels. It'd be a great movie for them to see as well. So I would strongly encourage that. But as I was in the last segment talking about some things that you can do to get involved, I had a conversation today with somebody from Middle Tennessee that is a stay-at-home mom, and she's saying, you know, we went and saw this movie as a church group, and a lot of us are stay-at-home moms. How can we help? What can we do? Maybe we don't have the time to actually be a mentor and this isn't the season in our life where we can do that and have that patient contact. There's tons of things that you can do. You can first off pray. And I think sometimes that's kind of thrown away as of course you can pray and nobody really does it. That's how I got connected with Hope, is I would go once a week and I would pray for the prayer needs of the staff and of the patients. And then other ways is you can write encouraging notes to moms. You don't even have to know their name. Just say, I'm praying for you. I'm thinking about you. You can do this. We support you. Mother's Day's coming up. You can do gift bags for the moms. We're actually having a Mother's Day brunch for some of our patients, and we have a church that's going to help us with gift bags for those moms. So I would encourage you to think about ways that you could reach out to a pregnancy center in your area and say, look, I may not have time to come in and sit down with the patient, but I can put a gift bag together and bring that in for a mom. I can put my small group can do encouraging notes for these moms. Whatever that looks like, because what we want is, and what we know is, we find a lot of the patients that choose abortion do so because they feel like there's a lack of support. And what these encouraging notes and these gift bags do is it shows, look, there are people out there that want to support you. When we have 70 baby showers a year at Hope, that's showing them, look, you're not in this by yourself. We're having a photo shoot tomorrow at Hope for maternity pictures and for baby pictures. Why do we do that? Because we want these patients to know that they're loved and they're cared for and they're not in this by themselves. And it's not me taking a picture of them. It is a professional photographer. Actually, Amanda May Photos, and she was actually featured in People Magazine just this week. And so we're bringing in a legitimate professional photographer to provide these photos for these moms. And we do that because we believe and we care about these women, and we want them to know that they are loved, that they have value, that they deserve respect. And so, look, when people say that, well, all you care about is baby, all you care about is, you know, once baby's born, you're not doing anything, that is just not true. And so I would encourage you to go see the movie. I pray that it gets you energized, that it would empower you to get involved. We always need mentors at Hope, and other pregnancy centers do. They need volunteers. We need people praying. We need people giving. Maybe the Lord has blessed you financially, and you've been looking for ways to kind of use your finances for the kingdom. This is a great way to do that, is partnering with pregnancy centers across this country that are doing work, that are truly nonprofits. We're not making a dime off these patients. We don't charge anything. Nothing. And so partner with us financially. Partner with us in your prayers and other ways as well. Now I want to shift gears to some things that are going on in D.C. If you'll remember, a few weeks ago, Senator Ben Sasse brought forth a bill, and it was Born Alive Protection Act, I think is what it's called. But ultimately what it said was if a baby survives a botched abortion, that baby deserves the protections of any other baby. And that was a response to the Virginia governor saying, you know, once baby is born, we'll make the baby comfortable, and then, you know, we'll decide what to do after that. So all it's saying is, look, if baby survives a botched abortion and is born alive, it deserves protections. Pretty common sense, pretty simple. It's not saying anything about abortions. It's not restricting abortion. It's just saying if the baby survives, let's make sure we give it the care it deserves. Of course, it did not pass in the Senate because an entire party decided to vote against that. That goes back to every single presidential candidate that's running is for abortion, at least on the Democratic side, is for abortion at any point during the pregnancy. And so in the House, in Congress, in Washington, D.C., some news today over at National Review, we see that Representative Steve Scalise, Minority Whip in the House of Representatives, has filed a discharge petition today to override Democratic leadership and bring the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act to the House floor. The bill, sponsored by Representative Ann Wagoner, would require that doctors provide medical care to infants born alive in attempted abortion procedures. Of course, Senator Ben Sasse, as I said earlier, sponsored a similar bill in the Senate, which Democrats blocked in a floor vote on February 25th. Scalise told National Review on Tuesday that he hopes to get enough signatures on the petition to bring the House bill to the floor and force Democrats to go on record on the issue. Speaker Pelosi refuses to bring it up for a vote, and Scalise said, "My discharge petition, if we achieve 218 signatures, will allow us to override that and bring the bill to the floor for a debate and a vote." Because the petition requires a majority, 21 Democratic representatives will have to join all 197 Republicans in signing on. Scalise is hopeful that many of his colleagues across the aisle will be willing to do so. He says, "I know there are a number that are interested in the bill, and there are a lot who won their election saying they're going to be pro-life. Here's their opportunity to stand up and be counted. If they are really pro-life, they'd sign on to this." Since Wagner introduced her legislation in February, House Republicans have taken to the floor for 25 consecutive legislative days to call for unanimous consent to debate and vote on the bill. They were blocked each time by the Democratic leadership. So listen to that. They're not even allowing it for a debate. And all the bill says is if a baby is born alive, it needs to be protected. But now Scalise believes that because the Born Alive bill is so popular with Americans, some Democratic politicians will seriously consider supporting his petition and even ultimately voting for the legislation. According to a recent poll, nearly 70% of Americans believe doctors should be required to care for children born alive after a failed abortion procedure, including 61% of Democrats. I think they're out of touch with Americans and even with most Democrats, Scalise said. It shows you just how far left Speaker Pelosi's new majority has moved. They've shifted away from moderate to liberal party to now where socialists in their party have literally taken over the center of gravity. The House voted on the Born Alive bill in January 2018, where Republicans still held the majority and only six Democrats crossed over to support the legislation. Unfortunately, Speaker Pelosi has been strong-arming a lot of people away from this bill, Scalise said. I think it's going to be a grassroots movement all across the country of people who think it's against American values to allow babies who are born alive not receive care. And so that's where we are in our current society, that we're at a place where even the most common sense piece of legislation that simply says if a baby is born and survives a botched abortion, that baby should receive the same care as any other baby born. That is not a stretch. That is not extreme. You know what is extreme? Saying that you're not for that bill. That's extreme. I would do anything for my children to protect them. And guess what? Everyone in Washington, senator or representative, were put there by the voters. They took an oath to serve and protect and to hold up the Constitution. And they're there to represent the people. Well, guess who that includes? Now, they may argue it doesn't include the unborn. I would argue it does. But you know what it does include? A baby that's born alive. They represent that child as well. And this is sickening and extreme for anyone to oppose this legislation. We'll talk more when we come back. So there's another great piece at National Review by David French, who is a Tennessean as well. That's just a sidebar. But he's writing about, he said, is it uncivil to argue that abortion kills a baby? And the reason why I wanted to bring this up is, and David French writes a lot of great stuff, and I would encourage you to read pretty much everything he writes. But the important thing about this is what we find in today's society, whether it be in politics or anything, we see a lot of folks saying, look, we need to be civil. We need to have civil discourse. And we've seen kind of the political environment go the opposite way, where everybody seems to be being uncivil and pointing fingers and yelling and screaming at each other instead of having logical debates and conversations. And it's important to note that some people will see the movie that I was pointing at and talking about earlier, Unplanned. Some people will say, well, that's uncivil, showing what goes on inside the abortion clinic and using the terminology that some of them use is uncivil. Saying that a heartbeat is extinguished is uncivil. That, you know, they'll say things like that because they know it to be true. And so being civil doesn't mean we water down truth. It doesn't mean we suppress truth. Being civil just means we tell the truth, but we do it in an appropriate way. And so what David French, I'm going to read some of this article because I thought it was important. He was accused by another writer for forgetting his own principles when he wrote that, and this was David French wrote this a few weeks ago, a proposed Virginia law that would have eased certain restrictions on later abortions promoted infanticide and barbarianism. So he's referring to a piece that David French wrote rebutting inaccurate legal arguments about a proposed Virginia late-term abortion bill. The bill would have made it dramatically easier to obtain an abortion after the second trimester by reducing the number of physicians required to certify the medical need for the abortion from 3 to 1 and by eliminating any required showing of severity before the doctor and mother can determine that the birth would impair her physical or mental health. And then David French called the proposed law barbaric. He said it enabled infanticide. And then, of course, French says, I stand by those words. As tough as they are, I believe they're true, and sometimes the truth is hard to hear. One of the many reasons that politics is so contentious, in addition to garden variety, greed, ambition, and the very human will to power, is that it deals with extraordinary, weighty matters, including matters of life and death. Is a pacifist uncivil if he opposes war in part by pointing out how deadly and gruesome modern conflict can be? Is an advocate for intervention uncivil if he vividly describes the torture and mass death in a genocidal regime? Was an abolitionist uncivil when he described the true conditions of American slaves? A person can and typically should tell difficult truths without being uncivil or indecent. It is one thing to contest an idea or to share a fact or even to offer your own description. It is another thing entirely to offer personal insults or ascribe evil motives to your opponents, especially when we, unlike Christ, can't see into people's hearts. Moreover, petty insults are particularly coming from Christians. We know that our virtue comes from Christ, not ourselves. We can boast only in Him and should be grateful, not proud, when we are able to perceive truth. It is a common tactic in public discourse to try to banish ideas from debate by labeling their very utterance uncivil. You see this in the battle over gender identity, where it is now considered so malicious to refer to transgender people with pronouns that match their biological sex that in some jurisdictions you can even face legal sanction if you call Chelsea Manning a he. We saw this in the battle over gay marriage, where even expressing the idea that marriage is properly defined as the union of a man and a woman was seen as too outrageous to utter. And we see this all the time in the debate over abortion, where one side's true objection is to the humanization of the unborn child. That's the core of the argument. If the child is rightly viewed as a distinct human being, then the implications of the act of abortion become far more grave. The fight over abortion is a fight over this very reality. The humanity of the child. The consistent goals of the pro-life movement include educating the public about the scientific facts of fetal development. For example, from the moment of conception, the child has its own DNA. It is a distinct human being immediately. Making moral arguments about the worth of the human life and sharing with the public the often gruesome facts of the abortion process itself. Nothing about this argument is easy. Everything about the argument risks triggering deep emotion. And those emotions are perhaps most raw when discussing late-term abortion, the act of killing a child who not only can survive outside the womb, but also can certainly find parents willing to love and raise him or her. In this debate, a number of our fellow citizens hold deeply misguided and often wrong thoughts, including the notion that late-term abortions always arise in medical emergencies and that late-term abortions for convenience are essentially mythical. I've been part of the pro-life movement my entire adult life, French says. I've had countless conversations with pro-choice Americans. In the vast majority of instances, I find that they reason in good faith from incorrect first premises, often without knowing facts in the baby about the baby or facts about the procedures. In fact, you see some of that ignorance on display in the Nation article critiquing French. It actually contains the rather stunning statement that says this, quote, conflating abortion with killing babies is as factually accurate as claiming that conservatives eat puppies, end quote. The vast majority of abortions stop a beating heart. It's not the mother's. In fact, when seeing the level of ignorance that so often dominates the abortion debate, French is reminded of an extraordinary act of grace in the midst of another brutal, unjust death many years ago. In the face of torture, mockery, and murder, Christ was able to face those same killers and utter words that have echoed in history. Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. If the choice is between speaking the truth and facing accusations of incivility, or keeping in quiet and being applauded for your decency, one must always choose the truth. But choosing to speak the truth and facing the inevitable backlash does not relieve us from the obligation of grace. In fact, aside from a few sad exceptions, at its core, the pro-life movement is characterized by grace. It is just as eager to forgive, support, and heal as it is to teach, argue, and protest. Our pro-choice friends are wrong about abortion with deadly consequences, but with few exceptions, their errors are not malicious. They truly do not know what they do. It is not uncivil or indecent to try to correct ignorance or make philosophical and religious arguments. It's our fundamental moral responsibility. Again, that's an article by David French over at National Review. I would encourage you to read that. Share it with your friends. So as we have this conversation, I'll be honest. It is at times difficult for me to be civil when I'm talking about the issue of abortion. Why? Because it angers me. It angers me to know that there are candidates right now running on a platform that says abortion should be allowed at any point during the pregnancy for any reason. It angers me to hear people say that most abortions are done out of medical necessity and not convenience, because that's just flat out false. It angers me when people say it's not a baby, it's a clump of cells. It angers me when I hear people say my body, my choice, when they're referring to a baby that has its own body and doesn't get a choice. But when we have these conversations, we don't water down the truth, but we are to be civil. So as I'm watching Unplanned today, and I'm thinking about conversations that I may have in the future with people about this issue, how do we approach? And then I think about back during the slavery and what that looked like and what kind of conversations were had on behalf of those that were in bondage, those that didn't have a voice. But there was a segment of the population that said, this isn't right, this isn't okay, we're going to do something about it. We're going to speak for them. We're going to seek to get them rights. And so as we have these conversations, as we think about this, yeah, we are to be civil, but being civil doesn't mean we stop telling the truth. You know, some people say, well, I'm just blunt and I tell it like it is. Well, some of those people are jerks, and that's me telling it like it is. Yeah, you tell it like it is, but you also find ways to be very a jerk to somebody else. I'm not saying be a jerk to somebody, but I am saying that we need to tell what is actually going on. That's what this movie did so well, is it shows you what actually goes on in the abortion clinic. The conversations that are had, the physical trauma that is had, not only on the unborn, but on the mom. The heartbreak that comes with that, the families that are broken apart because of that, the relationships that are ended because of that, the lasting ramifications because of a decision. And so why do I get on here every single week and talk about life and abortion? I mean, right now you can go to our podcast site and you'll see, I think, 135 shows. And there's a common theme. And if you've listened to all of them, you probably think, hey, you said that last week or you said that a month ago. The reason why we do this every single week and have these conversations every single week and talk about legislation and talk about things that are going on in the culture and in society is because I believe it matters. We as an organization believe it matters. 60 million heartbeats have been ended in the womb since 1973 in Roe v. Wade. Roughly a million every single year. The reason why we talk about this every week is because that number should haunt us as a society. That number should haunt us as Christians and as a country. When this day ends today, roughly 3,000 abortions would have occurred on this day alone. So there's a lot of work to do, and we're going to keep talking about it as long as the Lord gives me breath to do so. We'll be back. So a good conversation today as we talked about the movie Unplanned. I would recommend you go see that. Again, it was number 4 at the box office this past weekend. Because of the great showing this past weekend, I think they've added 700 theaters across the country. They're actually working on an international release as well that's going to be coming out soon, and so just excited about the impact it's going to have and the success that it's already had. It's just pretty amazing. Also, be paying attention to what's going on in D.C. Hopefully in the near future we'll hear if Representative Scalise was successful or not, about what I talked about earlier on bringing the bill forward in the House that would protect babies that survived botched abortions. Also, here in the state of Tennessee, we are seeing some more conversations about the heartbeat bill and some other pro-life legislation that's going on. Reach out to your state reps and your senators to let them know where you stand on these issues. I think it is important, and they do want to hear from you. Also, I know that at times when nonprofits or when anybody is having an event, it's usually a common thing for them to say, hey, the spots are filling up quickly. And then you hear that and you're like, well, are they really? Or is that just something you're saying to get us to go sign up? Okay, we have a banquet coming up April 25th. And I'm telling you, spots are filling up. Like, that's not me just being dishonest and trying to sell you on signing up. But they really are. We're having a lot of people reach out and are excited about coming to the banquet on April 25th. You can learn more about that at investinghope.com. Click on the Get Involved tab and then click on Events, and you can find all the information. You can RSVP right there on our website. But spots are filling up quickly. We'd love to see you there. I'd love to see you there. You'll get to hear from me, from one of our former patients as well. And it's just going to be an amazing night as we celebrate what God has been doing through Hope Resource Center. And so excited about that. Come join us. It's going to be fun. Again, investinghope.com. If you enjoy this show, I would encourage you not only to listen live at Joy 620 and all the other shows that come on, but also subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. It's important that you would do that and share it with your friends. If you have some friends that are curious about this work and the pro-life movement, and you want them to kind of hear some conversations about it and to point them in the right direction, at least what we believe to be the right direction, I would encourage you to share the show with them as well. Again, we are grateful for those that listen and partner with us. If you want to partner with us financially at Hope, you can go on investinghope.com, click on the big blue donate button, and we would love for you to do that. Monthly gifts, quarterly gifts, single one-time gifts, whatever that looks like, we would welcome that. I'm excited coming up in May. I'll have more information soon, but we're having a great fundraiser that's coming up with a national radio show, and so I'll be sharing more information about that in the near future. Also, want to point you to, of course, our Facebook page. If you want to keep up with everything going on at Hope, Facebook's a great place to do that. Also, sign up on our website, investinghope.com. You can sign up for our email list. And so each month, we're not going to send you a ton of emails. I'm not going to send you a ton of emails asking for money. But what we do is each month, we send what we call a snapshot. And it says, we've been working on the one for March, and that'll be getting in your inbox very soon. And all it says is, hey, this is what happened in March. This is how many patients we saw. It's got a quick blurb from me about what went on during that month. And it's a great way to keep up with what's going on at Hope Resource Center. Again, go to our website, investinghope.com, and sign up to be a part of our email list. Also, we'll be sending out information about our banquets and different things like that when you sign up for the email list. It's also a great way for you to know, hey, you know, am I going to be coming and speaking at your church or at churches around the area? That's a great way to learn and know about what's going on there as well. And so, again, we are just honored that you would partner with us and that you would stand with us. This is the issue that will define my generation. There's no question in my mind about it. But one day, the history books will write and they'll say, these folks were involved in ending abortion in the United States of America. And we want to be a part of that. And so we're excited to see what God's going to do in that. I believe, of course, I'm a little biased. I believe that the pregnancy center movement is the start of all of that. And it finally makes its way to legislation, but it's got to start on the ground, face to face, one-on-one, with the men and women of our city that are facing unplanned pregnancies. And we're able to do that at pregnancy centers across this country. We're grateful for your partnership, and we'll talk to you next week. But it's here in the ashes, I'm finding treasure.